Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, it's been a few weeks. I missed you, buddy.
Likewise, Jim. Great to see your smiling face.
Aw. Right back at you, big guy. Right back at you. But as much as I'm sure our listeners want to hear us complimenting each other back and forth, let's move on. Let's talk about some Penn State football. We're now a week removed from the blue-white game. We are smack dab in the middle of the offseason. But I did want to hit on one last topic with the blue-white game with you, something we've been talking about all week, but I'm sure you want to put your two cents in. A little bit of an incident at the blue-white game. A fan started heckling James Franklin, and James Franklin, for some reason, felt it was important to respond to him. Not a good look, is it?
No, and I guess a few sort of thoughts come to mind. The fact that we've seen this happen now a few times. You know, we've talked a lot, usually with respect to criticism of Franklin and just analysis of him. You know, have you learned from your mistakes? And I guess that's sort of my first thing is, why haven't you learned from your mistake here? You're getting paid how many millions of dollars? Just walk away. And then I also wonder, you know, you talk about expectations and pressure heading into the season. Is it getting to him? I mean, look, he has earned his big game James moniker. He has. He continues to not perform well against teams of comparable or superior talent. And until he addresses that, even though he had an opportunity to do that in the Notre Dame game, as well as other games last year, and he didn't take advantage of it, then I think fans have a right to criticize him.
Well, I'll take the other side. Just first of all, let me start with, he can't win. He can't, you as a coach, as a high profile figure, you can't win by responding to heckling, no matter how well you try to handle it. And I actually think it was hard to get exactly the nature of the conversation. It didn't seem like James, you know, was going after him, mad, upset. But he was engaging him, and there was no need for that. You can't win at it. And I know it was Urban Meyer talked about it a little bit. And, you know, I'm going to throw Urban Meyer out there as the voice of reason, which I'm not sure he always is. But his comment was, I always had a couple guys around me who would make sure I didn't do something dumb, like engaging with a fan. Even if, you know, James Franklin, I understand. And the fan, and we probably will think differently on this, but the word the fan was using was fraud, calling James Franklin a fraud. And I think there were times when you could justify that kind of argument, but I know you might say he still hasn't won a big game, but he still took his team to the Final Four last year. He took his team to the conference championship game. He won the offseason with all the players coming back. He's doing well in the portal. And he's doing well retaining talent. If you're going to call him a fraud, I think the timing was a little off also, Steve.
Well, I guess I would go back to, what have you done in terms of winning games that matter? These big games. Last year, he still didn't win any of those. He had a chance against Notre Dame. He had a chance against Oregon. I know Ohio State, they were sort of overmatched. But, you know, this has been his track record there. He has one win in 2016 against Ohio State where they blocked two kicks. Statistically, you might be more likely to be struck by lightning than to block two kicks in a single game. But outside of that, he really has nothing to hang his hat on in terms of on-field deliverables, in terms of winning games that matter. So I'm not going to go as far as calling him a fraud. But again, I would think you have all these people on your staff. He's supposed to be this guy who apparently has all this great self-awareness and psychology major and all this stuff. So for him to continue to engage with fans, and this is at a spring game, mind you, I sort of a little more sympathetic when I was at the game in 2018, where candidly he blew it against Ohio State. by letting them come back and letting that win slip away from him, where he was frustrated. That's when he made sort of the great to elite comment. But this wasn't the case here. We're talking about the spring game heading into a season where there are high expectations, and there should be. So, you know, I guess I'm not maybe as sympathetic as you are, although, again, I won't go as far as calling him a fraud.
Well, I think the other part to this is he's human, and when you get someone yelling at you, you're a fraud. And the other part to this, Steve, is I believe there was the game last year against Ohio State, walking off the field, emotions are raw, a tough game to lose, fans started heckling. I think James was emotional and angry in responding. I didn't get that from him in this particular encounter, but even with that said, he shouldn't do it. He shouldn't do it. And, you know, as far as the big games, it's funny. It seems like games that he has, that he does win, they don't count as a big game, because I know SMU, Boise State, some people will trivialize those, but those are playoff games against highly ranked teams that, you know, until they be. Let me ask you a question. I want to ask you this ahead of time.
Let them know that I'm shaking my head as you're saying that these quote unquote big games.
Yes, I know that you are. And I'm sure our listeners, I'm sure several of them are shaking their head in agreement with you, Steve. And what I want to make sure is that the goalposts don't get moved. You and I talked about this off the air, or we're texting yesterday about this. You mentioned that in the coming season, it's essentially a two-game season, Oregon and Ohio State. We kind of slip in on the road at Iowa also, but I think if they beat Iowa, I think you're going to say, well, Iowa's not that good. You won't give them credit for a big win. So here's what I'm asking you. Will winning one of those two games against Oregon or Ohio State, will you count that finally as a big win for James?
I will. It's not going to erase the 12 years of consistent disappointment of him failing to win those games, but, you know, at least he will have one that he will have in his record outside of that fluke game in 2016 against Ohio State. So he will be one in however many record, which is better than the goose egg he essentially has now. You know, that said, look, the expectations, you act like I'm creating them. The expectations are set by, you know, the odds makers. I mean, they're sitting there telling you either favored into a game or you're not favored to win the game. So yeah, it's difficult. I will grant you that, to go an entire season to win all the games that you should, you know, injuries and the like. And you know, that shouldn't be dismissed. And Franklin, to his credit, he has learned from his previous years in terms of winning the games the past few seasons that he's supposed to. Prior to the last few seasons, he would find a way to trip up. Think of all those years with Michigan State when he has some talented teams here in 16, 17 in particular, or I guess 17, 18 in particular. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it comes down to there are teams where you're going to be equally matched, or, you know, maybe sometimes you perform better and find a way to beat the teams that on paper you're not supposed to. He has not done that. And my guess is he's probably aware of that too, which is why you saw this frustration come out again in a spring game. I grant you that it wasn't emotional. It shouldn't be emotional, because this was a spring game. It wasn't an emotional response to a lot of decisions that he made on the field, which probably led to disappointment, which was probably the case in the Ohio State games you referenced.
I'll add one last point to this whole discussion. You call the, if he beats, say, Oregon, you say, well, that'll be one big win. You dismiss 2016 as a fluke win. Ohio State also had some fluke scores in that game also. So it really kind of evened out, Steve.
If they play that game 100 times in 16, my guess is Ohio State wins 98 of them at a minimum. And again, two block kicks. I just go back to the statistics. What are the odds?
Did Ohio State have any special teams block kick or anything like that in that game?
I'm trying to remember.
I think they did.
I think they may have had one.
Yeah, so they weren't the only – Penn State wasn't the only ones with the fluke scores. So – I'll tell you what, maybe between segments we could go take a better look at that game and what happened there. But instead, how about we move on? We look forward. And I'm going to give you a statement that I've made, Steve, and I want to get your reaction to it, because I think we've established that you are at best a realist with the team, and I may at times be the optimist, the guy with the glass half full. But here's what I'm going to say. I think my expectation for this year, 2025, is the highest my expectation level has been for a Penn State team under James Franklin, and maybe even years prior to that. It's been a long time since going into the season I felt the level of expectation I do for this season. Agree or disagree?
I would agree. The closest, I guess, would have been 2017, although I think there's a more complete team this time than there was then. Although I'll just reiterate something I've said before that lasted me from my high school football days, is Coach said the key to happiness is low expectations. So when you enter this season with high expectations, prepare to be disappointed. I hope that's not the case, but you know, just life, unfortunately, seems to suggest that's more often the case than not.
Oh my God, Steve, you are glass half empty and the glass has a leak in it.
I'm just speaking life, Jim.
Well, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more optimistic than you about it. And I want to take a look at this team and talk to you about why I have raised expectations for this team. The fact is, in college football, I don't know if there's a team. I cannot recall a team that has won a national championship without having high expectations going into it, meaning the talented teams win out in college football. There's not the fluke. Vanderbilt is not going to win the national championship this year.
No, that's the case. A lot of these teams, though, have been blessed with good health. And I think that's probably even more important now that we're in this era of the transfer portal, where depth for everybody, including Penn State, is going to be tested because guys want to play.
Yes, and depth will be tested, especially with the longer playoff. If you have a 16 or 17 game season, stuff is going to happen. Injuries are going to happen. People are going to get nicked up. You do need that depth. All right, Steve, when we come back, I want to take a look more at the specifics of this team and why I at least have such high expectations for them. And I'm going to see where you agree, where you disagree, and where you think the team still needs some work. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. Quarter number two of our show. And Steve, when we finished up segment number one, I was telling you, I was making the statement that my expectation level for this year's team is probably higher than, I know it's higher than any other time in the James Franklin era. And I believe also that, first of all, that was a surprise that I felt this way. I thought 2024 would kind of be the end of that window, but Singleton, Drew Aller, Deni Dennis Sutton, these guys all coming back, changed that perspective. What do you think of that?
I agree completely. And I think it's a testament to Pat Kraft, the alignment, and NIL to really give us hope for this upcoming season, to try to keep most of what was attainable, you know, together, understanding that you were going to lose some very talented players and Abdul Carter and Tyler Warren and others to the draft, but those two in particular. But really optimistic about the returning production, particularly in some really critical areas. So I share your optimism. I guess I'm just trying to manage my own expectations, knowing, you know, what history and odds tend to suggest is the case.
Well, I also think the other part to this, Steve, is just looking at the game of college football now. I think we had a few years where if you were if you weren't named Ohio State, Alabama, or Georgia, you probably didn't have much chance to win a national championship. But I think if one thing we were taught last year was there's more parity, I think, in the game right now. And going into the season, I felt Ohio State was the most talented team in the country. And the fact is, if we still had the four-team playoff model, Ohio State would not have even made the playoffs, Steve.
That's true.
Instead, they were the best. I don't think there's any doubt at the end of the season they were the best team in the country. The way they went through the playoffs, Oregon, the consensus number one team, they crushed. Tennessee, a good team, they crushed. They just zipped through the playoffs like they were by far the best team. My point being, though, again, with a four-team playoff, they don't even make the playoffs, okay? So I think that tells you it's a different kind of sport, and the conceivably you could end – Oregon is the other example. They went through the regular season, the only undefeated team. They were unanimously the number one team going into the playoffs, and look what happened to them. They got crushed in their first playoff game. So I'm saying all that to – go ahead. You want to respond to that?
Well, I was just going to say that I think what the Oregon people would point out, you going back to what is your path? I don't want to relitigate, you know, the playoff path there, but we were talking about Penn State, you know, playing SMU and then Boise State. You know, Oregon's first game is Ohio State, who ended up winning the national championship. I mean, that goes a long way in determining, you know, your likelihood of success here.
It does, and that needs to be fixed, okay? And I think most people agree with that. But with that said, Oregon, it wasn't, they lost in a heartbreaker to Ohio State. They got run off the field. They were not even – they were embarrassing in that game. And I think if you talk to an Oregon person, you know, they're going to tell you how disappointed they were in that performance in the playoffs. It'd be different, you know, if it was a competitive game, they lost by one score to Ohio State. You know, I could sympathize. But they got their doors blown off, Steve.
Out there on the West Coast, too.
Yes, yes. So, all this to say, even with my optimism for this Penn State team, it doesn't mean that they're going to go undefeated, win a national championship. But I think going into it, they have as good a chance as anybody else to win a national championship. Again, usual suspects. We'll talk about, you know, Ohio State. I know Texas is a team that brought back a lot. Arch Manning at quarterback. I think you throw Oregon and Ohio State in there no matter what, because those are teams that reload. And even Ohio State, I believe they had 14 guys drafted. And if you ever would think that's an indicator, oh my goodness, that's a rebuild in Columbus. No, it's not. They're just reloading, Steve.
Money talks.
Yes, it does. And they put money towards it. But now with all that said, I still feel really good about this Penn State team. And I want to go through something that I just saw, which I thought was fascinating. Pro Football Focus, they put out their rankings of, you know, players that for each position in college football. They had Drew Aller as the fourth best quarterback, Nick Singleton and Catron Allen as the third and sixth best running back in the country, This was fascinating to me. They had Vega Ioane, number 8, as far as interior offensive linemen. Deny Dennis Sutton in the top 10 in edge rushers. Zane Durant, the number 2 defensive tackle. And A.J. Harris, the number 7 cornerback in the country. That's a lot of talent to start with, Steve.
Absolutely. I think that's your reason for optimism. The talent is there. It's can you utilize it, particularly in these big games that we were sort of talking about in the first segment, and can you stay healthy? I think that's really the name of the game for this season.
Yeah, and everyone's going to experience some health issue. Somebody's going to be, you know, out for a game or two, whatever. But I think Penn State is unusually prepared for that also in a lot of positions. At offensive line, where guys, there's so much contact that on the offensive line, that's a place where injury will hit quite a bit. It's not unusual to have 2 or even 3 starters out. This is a team that could absorb that.
Well, they proved that last year. I mean, they did have guys go out. You saw Nolan Ritchie step up. And, you know, I think we've talked about that being one position in particular that went from being a real, let's just be honest, drag until the last 2 or 3 seasons to now, you know, it's going to be a real strength. And there's a lot of depth. And I think not only the depth, but the fact that you've had this group of guys play together for so long. If you look at some of the great Penn State teams in the past, a lot of the one of the constants that you often saw there was an offensive line that was relatively older and had experienced not only in terms of just, you know, being a junior or senior in the program, but experience with each other. And I think that's really important in terms of looking to see, can they even make an additional stride this season?
That's a great point, because I think at offensive line, more than anywhere else, that cohesion is a factor, Steve, right?
And the communication, exactly. I mean, being able to sort of identify, you know, which assignments, and not only for yourself, but understanding, you know, those around you, what they're going to do, and have confidence that they're going to do what they're supposed to do. I think that's really important. And that's where I feel very good about that particular unit.
The same here. And you brought up about, you know, Nolan Ritchie taking over at right tackle for Anthony Donka, who, you know, could have argued last year that he was the number one offensive lineman. I know it's arguable because they had several players who were very good, but I thought it was fascinating that not only did they not, you know, lose a step when Nolan Ritchie took over, that's about when, and I'm not saying it's because Donka was out. I'm not saying this, but they actually played better down the stretch when Nolan Ritchie was in there. They didn't just lose a step. They gained a step, it appeared.
Yeah, that's a credit to Ritchie, you know, to staying committed to the program and the process, to be able to step in and not only be serviceable, but to actually have the team take a step forward. And I don't think it's any knock on Donka. You know, sometimes you have different strengths. I mean, Ritchie, I don't believe, is physically big as Donka. And maybe that becomes advantageous from a pass blocking perspective. Maybe they're going to move Donka next to Ritchie at right guard. I don't know. But, you know, just the fact that you have multiple options there that you can feel very comfortable about that are going to go and put a dominating performance. I mean, a lot of programs right now would envy that, particularly in this transfer portal era.
Well, and to your point about continuity, having the center come back, the guy literally in the center of the offensive line, but also that's the continuity, the guy who, you know, calls the blocking assignments and those things. There's also that continuity there where you don't have that changeover at the start of the season. This is a group that should hit their stride right from the start.
I agree. You know, and I guess, you know, one other thing I'm waiting to see, you know, this year we sort of saw the team progress as the season went on, has become more of a run first team. And given the talent, you mentioned what, 2 of the top 6 running backs there in terms of Pro Football Focus in your backfield. I mean, to me, the idea that we could just sort of dictate our will offensively, particularly in that run game, knowing that the wide receiver position, you know, is at best a question mark, I think, at this point going in. That's something I am looking forward to seeing and hopefully being reminiscent of some of those Penn State teams that, you know, I sort of remember growing up, again, dictating the will, establishing that running game.
And the funny thing is, to say as a fan, we're looking forward to seeing more running. That usually is counter to most fans who want to see the ball get chucked all around. But when you, as you put it out, you start with two of the top five or six running backs in the country with, I think you got to say, at least arguably is one of the best offensive lines in the country. Boy, that's a pretty good starting point for an offense.
It is, and that should also make the job of the receivers a little easier, as well as sort of, you know, what the production we're going to have to replace with Tyler Warren. You know, if you have established a run game, those linebackers, safeties going to cheat up, you're going to get some single coverage that should open up the passing game, which, frankly, based on what we've seen the last few seasons, needs some help.
And you know what, Steve, as we approach the end of this segment, I don't want to get started on it just yet. I want to move now to the receivers, and I'm going to call it generically receivers, not wide receivers, tight ends, the receivers, all of them. And to James Franklin's credit, he talks in terms of, you know, the wide receivers aren't just competing with each other for playing time. They're competing with tight ends. And I'll add even they're competing with running backs, okay? If we look at them all as weapons, but they did make a lot of moves in the transfer portal at wide receiver. That's what I want to ask you about when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Steve Pavlik. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking about this upcoming Penn State season, basically with the premise that I started with, Steve, that my expectations are higher for this team than they were for any James Franklin team. And you got to concede where there are issues. Wide receiver, and I'm going to throw tight end in also, because you can't lose a guy like Tyler Warren without having some drop off. So generically, you know, at receiver, I do think the tight end position will still be okay. They have enough guys there, a lot of promise there. Wide receiver, though, they completely turned this room over. You know, Omari Evans gone, Trey Wallace gone, Julian Fleming gone. Those, I think you could call the three top receivers from the 24 team. And in their place, it's Devontae Ross, the transfer from Troy, Kyron Hudson, the transfer from USC, and more recently, Treiber Pena, the transfer from Syracuse. It leads to a couple questions about the, first of all, about the position itself. Did they do everything they could there? Are you more optimistic with these guys compared to you how you were a year ago at wide receiver? What do you feel about the talent level there?
Well, look, I think the first order of business is recognizing that you have a problem. And then the second thing is going out and doing something about it. Clearly, what you had last year was not what you wanted to have in terms of production, or probably more accurately, lack thereof, heading into this season. So I'm hopeful that the guys coming in will improve on what we saw. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe the receivers had a catch in the semifinal game against Notre Dame. I mean, that's unbelievable. Outside of a service academy, I don't know that I can recall a team doing that in this modern era. So, yeah, I guess hopeful in terms of, you know, you figure these, honestly, guys can't be any worse. And I guess sort of remain to be surprised, you know, can they be any better? I know, you know, to Franklin's credit, he has done a pretty good job of roster retention in this era. And I do give him credit for that because I think that's very difficult. And I think for the most part, he's been selective in trying to identify, you know, transfer portal additions, you know, guys that are not only going to come in and hopefully have a chance to not only play, but also, you know, fit the team. I can't recall a position that's just been completely overhauled like this in terms of the transfer portal. And, you know, I respect to the guy from Syracuse, Pena, coming in. I mean, you know, I hope he can hit the ground, you know, running, sort of get on the same page there as Aller. I guess that's one thing I sort of wonder. That said, you know, why I sort of remember about, you know, football and playing is, you know, in terms of making an immediate impact, usually the further away from the ball you are, that's still easier to do. Just because unlike the offensive line, we sort of have to get that cohesion. You don't really need that as much the further you are away from the ball, whether that's a defensive back on defense or in this case, a wide receiver on offense. So from that case or perspective, there's some optimism. Again, if you're establishing a run game, you could make these guys look a lot better just because there should be easier for them to get some of the separation that appeared to be lacking last year. And we'll see if Kotelnicki, you know, again, that was something we think we talked about in an earlier segment in terms of, you know, can he scheme these guys open? We saw some of that, some early games last year. We didn't really see it much down stretch. So it's something I'm looking out for as well.
Well, I also think, and I know this is counterintuitive, but Tyler Warren was such an elite player. And I think also a bit of a crutch for Drew Aller. You know, when in doubt, that's where the ball's going. And can't really blame him for that. You know, you have an all-world tight end. You use him, right?
You should. I guess where I'm starting to wonder, you know, depending on what the coaching staff is seeing in the offseason, you know, one of the things I liked when we actually had Bill O'Brien that first season, we had a lot of two tight end sets. And one of the reasons, again, I mentioned before, I did play some tight end in high school, so I'm a little bit biased, but it keeps the defense honest. Because when you have two tight ends, you can run out of that or you can throw out of that. You can sort of, you know, make that adjustment there on the line. And so if we're not really getting much out of the wide receiver room in production, we talked about a lot of the depth here for the wide receiver. Now, again, it's going to be very difficult to replace the production from what I think is a generational talent, Tyler Warren. That said, you have a lot of guys that are very promising, you know, sort of waiting to replace him here, and maybe get two of those guys out on the field, at least more than we've seen. And again, I like the idea that you can sort of run or throw out of that set.
Well, the thing is, I don't think that multiple tight ends is really new to Penn State. I mean, there's talent there. And I mentioned it earlier that I like hearing from, you know, the offensive coordinator, James Franklin. Let's face it, it comes from on high. It's Franklin who's going to establish this. But I like to look at your running backs, your tight end, your wide receivers, their weapons. And I want to get as many good weapons out on the field as I possibly can. And if that means Catron Allen and Nick Singleton on the field at the same time, and you put Singleton out somewhere where you have a linebacker trying to cover him, I think that's a mismatch also. So you made the point. And yes, it's the case also. Multiple tight ends, you're probably going to create some mismatches there. And they do have the talent at tight end also. Khalil Dinkins, I think, is a name that gets forgotten. I think he's a pretty good ball player. And, you know, we've seen a bit of Luke Reynolds, the freshman. He's probably going to be the next great one. We also have a real good freshman in Olish who's coming in. And a guy I keep bringing up because he missed all of last year, Andrew Rapelier, who a year ago they were talking about him being the next great tight end. So I'm pretty happy with where that tight end room is, Steve.
Well, yeah. I mean, I go back to sort of like common sense. If you got an abundance of talent at tight end and you may be lacking a talent at wide receiver, you know, at the end of the day, maybe you ought to put more tight ends out there, at least situationally. That said, you know, they're going to be down a distance. It's going to dictate what you need to do versus what you'd like to do. So I think that's important. I also think you made a good point about Dinkins in terms of obviously being underappreciated. Clearly, Warren got a lot of the focus last year. But Dinkins, if I recall correctly, made a lot of big-time catches because, you know, defenses may not have been paying as much attention to him as he should. A lot of sort of touchdowns and, you know, third and fourth down catches that really came in the came up in the clutch. So, you know, I think that's encouraging. You know, as we get further into the season, who can you rely on to make those big plays in those clutch moments? To have somebody with that experience, I think, is valuable.
No doubt about that. And the tight end position is one of those it's such a great safety net for the quarterback. So I think they are going to be used. We're going to see multiple tight ends. But going back to wide receiver, you've already used the expression on the show. First thing to fix a problem is you got to recognize you have a problem. I have no doubt in my mind that this staff has recognized they had a problem at wide receiver. And they did, you know, three high-profile transfers that they brought in. And that's not typical at Penn State. My interpretation of that, Steve, is they're going for it this year. Retaining the players that they did, they said, look, we need wide receivers. They brought in two guys in the portal. They said, you know what? That's still not enough. They went out and got in Syracuse's Traber Pena, probably one of, if not the biggest name in the portal at wide receiver. And also, this was a guy who allegedly, based on, you know, the way the Syracuse coach spoke, their issue was he was looking for a payday. He was looking for more money. And we've been told for years, guys looking for the big payday, Penn State's typically not the place to go.
I don't know about that. I mean, that's what the Syracuse coach is saying is the guy's walking off the field. I mean, look, I'm just looking at it from he had a good quarterback last year in Kyle McCord, and he's not there anymore. And he's probably wondering what the production's going to be behind him. So, frankly, if I were him, you know, I have a chance to make some money, and I have a chance to get out of what could be a very bad system compared to what I had last year where the guy could actually get me the ball. I don't fault the guy for leaving. So I just question the motivation there of the Syracuse coach.
Well, I'm okay with – I think multiple things can be true. I think this is Penn State establishing that they might not be going after the really high-end guys, you know, or bidding on, you know, the five-star quarterback coming out of high school with those huge deals. But they're more about retention, but they're at least sticking their toe in that water to, you know – bring in, like I said, three pretty high-profile wide receivers.
Well, I mean, look, you have a thing called sunk cost. You spend all this money to bring a lot of the guys we talked about earlier back. So it doesn't make sense to bring these guys back with hope of chasing a national championship if you know your deficiency at the wide receiver position is going to go against all those efforts. So at this point, you're either all in or you're not. So that's sort of how I view it. I guess I'm sort of wondering, what does this mean after this season? It may depend on how this season goes. You know, probably one of the earlier times we talked about the culture before, just needing to adapt to where we are now with respect to the transfer portal and NIL. And you know, hopefully the season ends well and there's not this case of buyer's remorse. That said, if the season is a disappointment, then, you know, a lot of the people that cut these checks may wonder, you know, whether or not they want to repeat that experience moving forward. That's sort of my fear, you know, looking sort of beyond this year. We have all these eggs in this year's basket. What is that going to mean for future years?
Well, let me ask you the question. What would it take for you to consider this a successful season? Is it national championship or bust?
I think it's an appearance in the championship. If they were to make the championship game and, you know, come up short against a superior team, you know, I would sort of recognize that as, hey, look, at least last year that made it beyond the semifinal experience. I think it's really going to depend on how they perform in the playoffs. I guess one of the reasons, you know, I'm maybe not as high on last season as you were was, you know, I don't really think it's that impressive to beat SMU and Boise State. I don't. and they had a very, you know, preferred path. It's no knock against Penn State. That was the path they were given. I just think it goes back to, you know, are we seeing as a program progress to beating teams of comparable or superior talent? You know, can, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best, sort of to paraphrase what Ric Flair said. And, you know, if we start to see some steps towards that in the regular season, beat Oregon or Ohio State, you know, maybe win the Big Ten championship, maybe have a really good game. I guess if you're going down that route, you probably have a pretty good seating there in the playoffs. But suppose you don't. Suppose you have a difficult path in the playoffs and you win a couple of impressive games. That would change my definition of success.
All right, that's it for quarter number three. Lots more to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Steve, I didn't get a chance to squeeze it in at the end of quarter number three, but I did want to point out, you know, we've been doing this show going on about 10 years now, okay? Doing it a long time. I would venture to guess, without going back, looking at all of the records, listening to every recording, this was the first Ric Flair mention we've ever had.
Oh, that's unfortunate. You should have more than that. Try to get those stats up moving forward now that I know.
Well, now that you're aware and now that you know and have that in your back pocket, going forward, you could give us like the Ric Flair quote of the week every time as we go on, Steve. How about that?
There's no shortage of material there, that's for sure.
Let's get back to, we were talking about, I asked you the question of what would it take to be a successful season. And I want to throw something at you, and I don't know, I don't want to use this as the over-under on successful season or not, because now with the way the playoffs are set up, you've got to do something in the playoffs, okay? But I think for Penn State, for James Franklin, for Drew Aller, they've got to win one of those two games against either Oregon or Ohio State in the regular season.
I agree. Absolutely. Because, look, you have talked about Franklin's history of not having any big game victories outside of, again, that fluke with Ohio State. And then you have Drew Aller, who, you know, also does not have the history of performing well in any games of consequence, so, or at least any victories. So I think that's sort of going to be the knock on him, you know, heading into the season. They're sort of aligned there, you know. Can they overcome their reputations? And unfortunately, they are going to be judged on these two games. And I think, you know, you talk about Aller and expectations for the season. Yeah, they're high. But I guess the reason for caution is, you know, what has his production level been against teams of, again, comparable or superior talent? And then we talk about a long season. You know, last year, Bo Prabula came in. He saved the season. He won that game in Wisconsin. And I think, you know, looking back at that Notre Dame game, I can't help but wonder, had Prabula been there, you saw Aller in the passing game were struggling and non-existent. Had you made a switch to Prabula and leaned on that successful running game, may we have had a different outcome? I know, you know, we'll never know the answer to that, but that sort of brings me to, you know, you talk about the quarterback room, Aller, five-star Pro Football Focus. Yeah, if he stays healthy, you know, I'm curious to see who's going to emerge as the backup QB. Are they going to be in a position to come in and play some meaningful snaps and increase production. You know, I don't know that there is any quarterback who's more awkward running the ball than Drew Aller than I've seen. It just does not come natural to him. He seems very indecisive and get just awkward. So, you know, whether it's Gronkemeyer or Smolik, I assume if they come in, they might be able to offer more of a threat there. And you saw it last year with Prabhu. That running game looks different when you have an actual threat there to run the ball at quarterback. And it's a long season. You may need somebody to come in and do that. And I can't help but look at this upcoming season and know, hey, there's another trip out there to Iowa. And it's going to be something that I'll probably, unfortunately, never going to forget, that experience when Clifford went down and what happened after that. So,
yeah, that's a great point. And I did want to get to, you know, that backup quarterback position, because it is a competition. But I don't know if you saw this. James Franklin has talked about saying, you know what, whoever the backup quarterback is, they will have some kind of package for him. And I know I've kind of changed my mind on this a bit, Steve. I always felt my starter, if he's my best quarterback, that's who I want to have out there. But, you know, the Bull Prabula package, and, you know, I felt there were times where I'm saying, let's see Prabula. Let's see him. And sometimes it's just because you bring in a relief pitcher doesn't mean you think he's better than the starter, but it just may be the times and circumstances. I got three lefty batters coming up. I want a left-handed reliever coming in. I'm, you know, inside the 10. I want to have an option when my quarterback has a read option. I want the quarterback to be an option to hold on to the ball and run it. And then the question becomes, you know, can Ethan Grunkmeyer or Jackson Smolik be that guy? And I'll tell you what, I know you weren't at the spring game, and if you weren't at the game, you didn't see it. But I saw some mobility from both of them. I think there's some potential there, Steve, that contest for the backup position wasn't just about, okay, what if Aller gets hurt and who's going to lead going into the 26th season? One of these guys could be a factor on the offense, even with everybody healthy.
Yeah, I would just add, you know, one of the things you talk about misproduction heading into the season, Tyler Warren ran that Wildcat a lot too back there. You know, I don't know if they have a replacement to that, which may, to your point, require you to depend more on this backup quarterback to come in and do some situational football. I think that's something. Look, Aller can do a lot of great things. He is just not a good runner. He's not a legitimate running threat there. And at this era of college football, there are certain situations where, you know, you're at a detriment as a result of that. And if these guys can come in and do that, that sort of plays to your strength of your team right now, which is the running backs and this offensive line and running the ball. And again, if we see a situation like we saw in Notre Dame where the passing game is struggling, particularly in the playoffs, I mean, that should be a lesson learned. Is, you know, if you have something there and it starts working, and that happens sometimes. Sometimes these defenses overprepare for Aller. Somebody comes in, it's a different look, and they get some success because they weren't expecting
it. Well, and I think it opens things up also for your running back. You know, you had, who was it? Was it Will Levis a couple years ago who came in literally 17 times in a row? He came in, he ran it. Well, but the fact is, if you bring in or place somebody at quarterback who's capable, not just a capable runner, but a very good runner, does that not open up something else for Catron Allen or Nick Singleton? Hey, maybe one of those guys should be that Wildcat quarterback. I you know what? I don't think I'm telling you anything new, Steve, but I think both those guys are pretty capable runners.
They are. I mean, I don't know what their experience is, you know, running the Wildcat. What I do know just from playing football and common sense is that when you know that that quarterback is not a legitimate run threat, it's really easy for that defense just to crash and key in on that running back. And to your point, if you can change that equation, it just opens everything up. And look, you saw it last year with Prabula when he would come in there, compared to when he had Will Levis, which he wasn't used effectively, you know, just sitting there just as a running straight ahead. You know, had you actually worked in some situations where he was handing it off and things like that, I think that would have benefited everybody.
Well, I think that's the good thing, though, about having an offensive coordinator like Andy Kotelnicki. He is creative, maybe sometimes to a fault, but I see you're nodding your head in agreement on that. But this is a guy who I think, you know, he had some, again, just a spring game, but he had some direct snaps to people that weren't quarterbacks. There are some things. I suspect we're going to see that from Andy Kotelnicki. And again, you've got all these weapons. Why not use them? I'm going to say they are going to find somebody else to use in a Wildcat environment, Steve.
I hope so.
I think we're going to see that. We talked about that quarterback battle as a position battle. I think another one that's going on is the backup running back. That's literally the number three running back, which is I think a lot of folks would dismiss that as an issue. And I do agree. It's probably more about 26 than it is about 25 if those first two guys stay healthy. But James Franklin has said, you know what? He wants to see a third running back get some carries. Again, you weren't at the spring game, but you know, I think Quentin Martin looks the part. And you know what? There's a couple other options there. Were you surprised that none of these guys entered the spring portal?
A little bit, to be honest. Just figured, you know, the desire to play elsewhere. You know, that said, they've seen how this has worked for Allen and Singleton, particularly now that you can sort of have a successful career. You witnessed what they've done while sharing reps. Maybe take some of those reps off to preserve your options for the NFL moving forward. So, you know, it's again, testament to Franklin and the staff for keeping these guys, you know, engaged. We'll see if they all stay after the season. You know, I think to your point, you know, whoever sort of emerges here, obviously likely to continue on, whoever isn't probably more likely to move on. And then, you know, do they bring different things to the table? And that's going to be sort of situational too. You know, do you have a guy that's really good at some short yardage in the event that, you know, Allen goes down? Do you have a guy that could be more potentially a threat catching something out of the backfield? You know, if Singleton's hurt, you know, Singleton's hurt for a good portion of last year. I sort of remember the middle part of the season. So to have somebody, if need be, that can come in and, you know, replace that production, take some of the reps away from Allen. Because I didn't think, no real knock against Allen, the team just wasn't effective when Singleton wasn't at full strength. And, you know, to their credit, those guys have stayed, Singleton and Allen, and the fact they have complementary skills, I think is helpful. And look, there's some games where, you know, one of them, for whatever reason, is having more success than the other. And I think that's good for a guy like Kotelnicki just to know, you know, hey, just because one guy doesn't have the hot hand, you know, this game, maybe the other guy will.
That's a good point. And the other point you made about could those, it fascinates me because the conversation is about the third running back, someone, one of the three guys winning that third. And I'll even, you know, throw in a fourth guy, Tyke Hayes, the true freshman, apparently has looked really good. But why does it have to be just one of them if there are different skills? And I think using the running back in a passing game, which I guess points to Quentin Martin, who has some experience there.
Well, you got to remember, too, from the passing game, if we're talking about, you know, getting down the road here to playoff games and games that are going to matter, I think it's not only a question of, you know, who can catch the ball out of the backfield, but really who can block and who understands those blocking assignments. Because at that point, you really are the last line of defense between the defender and Aller. And I wouldn't dismiss that in terms of figuring out, you know, who is the coaching staff have confidence in coming in there that's not going to blow a blocking assignment.
Exactly. And that's, I think both Katron Allen and Nick Singleton are willing blockers, which is half the battle, along with competency. All right, Steve, that is going to be it for the show. It went fast. Thank you, Steve. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The Collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.